welcome to 30 Brave Minutes, a podcast of the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. In 30 Brave Minutes, we'll give you something interesting to think about. Our topic today is the future of K-12 education. Joining us today are Dr. Serena Sinnemann and Dr. Naomi Lifshitz-Grant. Your host for 30 Brave Minutes is Jeff Frederick, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences.
About 50 million or so American kids leave their houses each morning to head to a public school. In fact, about 91% of all Americans in school go to a public one. Those same mornings, about 3.1 million teachers leave their houses, lesson plans and coffee in hand, to instruct the next generation of lawyers, doctors, engineers, entrepreneurs, and teachers. Reflective of America's national diversity, the public schools across the Fruited Plain now have more minority groups peopling the halls than whites. The percentage of high school dropouts across America, in fact, is in decline, though you might not know that, given that much of the news about public schools tends to focus on shortcomings. American schools serve any number of purposes: nutritional center, athletic and extracurricular opportunity provider, confidence builder, library, technology center, counseling center, laboratory, center for the performing arts, academic enrichment center, and of course, classroom. America spends more on public education than any other nation, but also educates a greater percentage of their children than almost any other nation in the world. International, national, regional, and state comparative metrics abound, but often they tell only the barest snapshot of how our public schools are actually performing, let alone how they're meeting the challenges of the 21st century. Teacher shortages proliferate in some states, including North Carolina, and schools like UNCP are meeting the challenge by creating more innovative approaches to preparing the next generation of classroom teachers. Today's topic: public education. What are we doing well? What will change? What are our challenges? Joining me today are Dr. Serena Sinnemann, coordinator of the Social Studies Education Program, and Dr. Naomi Lifshitz-Grant, coordinator of the Art Education Program, both public school teachers, both engaged in preparing the next generation of public school teachers to enter the marketplace, and both actively engaged in the scholarship of teaching and learning. Serena, welcome.
Hi.
What would you say, in order to start our conversations, are best practices that you and other teacher ed folks do to prepare students to become teachers in the public schools?
Well, I think that what we're realizing over the last, decade or so is that we're finding that focusing on simply content acquisition is not serving the needs of our students or of our workforce. There's an incredible emphasis on preparing our students for college and preparing them for career readiness, which means that there needs to be more of a balance of teaching students skills and helping them prepare for a 21st century learning. So there's this phrase of 21st century learning skills, which means learning how to work with technology, learning how to be able to think critically. That's an old adage, but being able to engage in analysis and being able to evaluate and synthesize information in ways, and even really being able to be creative and innovative. I have a favorite quote from futurist Alvin Toffler. He says that the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn. And I think that that really pretty much sums up what it means to engage in best practices in the 21st century.
Naomi, what are the best practices to prepare students to become teachers in the public schools?
Well, I think there's many facets to giving teachers or teacher candidates know-how in the classroom and to prepare them well. I think that we need, as teacher educators, we need to provide students with a mixture of both theoretical and practical experience. So, for instance, I'm a strong proponent of teaching towards students' development. So giving them a strong strong foundation of the developmental characteristics, needs, and capabilities of students, and then giving them opportunities to observe students in the school so they can really see their developmental capabilities in nature. Because the theory only gives us theoretical information, but when they're going into schools, they can really see the range of developmental needs that you have to accommodate when you're teaching. So you might have a class where there's students at a variety of different levels. For instance, yesterday I showed my students a video of a kindergarten first grade class of an art teacher teaching, and there was a huge range of capabilities. So we need to teach teachers how to differentiate instruction. So we can give them the theoretical foundation, but that's really not enough. We also need to give them opportunities to observe students in the classroom and see what their developmental capabilities are so we can cater lessons to meet their needs, but also figure out how to differentiate instruction to meet the needs of all students in our classroom. And that's really a big push in education. So I think that combination of both theory and practice is so critical in training our future teachers. I think it's really important for teachers, and I don't see this enough when I go out and visit classrooms, is to be facilitators of learning. There's often a teacher in the classroom that's a lecturer, and that's giving students knowledge that they have acquired. So I think it's so important to give students the opportunity to answer questions and for teachers to learn the kind of questions to ask students in order to guide learning. So I'm a big proponent of trying to teach my students and to see the value in being a facilitator of learning and to teach them to ask good guiding questions to kind of push learning forward and to guide learning in productive ways. And this kind of was an interesting moment that I had this week when I was meeting with my teachers who are now currently student teaching in the public schools. And, you know, they're just started teaching. They've only been there for 3 weeks and they're really new to education. They're undergraduate, so they haven't had much experience as a teacher in the classroom. And I had them last semester and really promoted being a facilitator of teaching and learning. And one of the students said she watched her teacher, her cooperating teacher, teach a lesson, and the cooperating teacher just told the students information about what they would be doing today. And she observed that and she saw that, you know, a lot of the kids were bored and they weren't paying attention and, you know, they were kind of drifting off. And then she taught the same lesson to the next class, and she decided to switch it up a little bit and to teach through questioning and to really engage the students in the lesson. And she said the difference was dramatic. So I provided them with that theoretical information about how to become a facilitator of learning. And then the student had that practical, hands-on experience where she could see it and see the benefit of it. And she said the kids just were totally involved and there was buy-in to the lesson. And that was a powerful kind of experience for her. And just as John Dewey said, it's like you have to learn through experience. And that's what we want to provide our teachers. Educators is the experience. So we give them the knowledge, but then give them the opportunity to have that experience. I think it's really important to provide students, you know, skills in order to write lessons and to develop curriculum. I think it's also important for teachers to learn how to set professional goals that are, and I like to have them set SMART goals, which are specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound goals. And I think that, you know, when I read my student teachers' reflections, they're like, I want to have like a great week where all the students are in perfect order, but that's not really a realistic goal. So if you set small, attainable goals, then I think you can really hone and improve your teaching practice. I think it's also really important important to teach teachers to be action researchers, to find problems in their classroom or issues that arise, and think about ways of resolving those issues and what action they need to take as teachers or as students in order to resolve those issues. And I think that's a powerful way to grow as a teacher, too. So as a whole, I think that that combination of theoretical and practical is so important, and then teaching teachers to be action researchers and reflective practitioners too is so important for teachers.
How would you say teachers are being prepared differently today than in the past 10 or 20 years?
I was actually student teaching about 20 years ago. And when I was student teaching 20 years ago, we student taught, and that was it. We wrote lessons, we student taught, and at the end of the day, you know, we were kind of done. And then as a capstone project, we kind of got to determine what we did. So many of us, you know, my colleagues who were student teaching at the same time as me, you know, wrote curriculum that we were interested in and so on and so forth. But teachers, there's a lot of accountability in teaching right now and a great push for assessment. And assessment is kind of changing. We still have these, you know, standardized tests, and teachers have to take, you know, the Praxis, or if, you know, in New York State, we had to take the New York State teaching tests. And I had to do that, and teachers today still have to do those tests. But what's changing is the capstone projects, which also become an assessment piece too. So now in North Carolina, they have many of the state institutions here have adopted the EdTPA program, which is an assessment protocol, which is really teaches teachers, and I hope it's a positive move in education, to analyze their own teaching as well as student learning. So I think it can be used as a powerful tool, but it's also a huge project for students to work on for student teachers. And I'm afraid that because of the enormity of it, that it might deter teachers from becoming teachers once they hear about it. So I think that we have to teach it in a very incremental way and also get the students to buy in to really understand the value of doing that assessment protocol. So that's a huge difference in teacher education now, is the tasks that they have to do in order to become teachers, like the EdTPA program, and many states have adopted it. I know New York State has, Georgia, California, and I'm sure many other states have adopted it. And there's mixed reviews about it. You know, talking to faculty members at other institutions in the arts, some feel like it's a burden, and they have to change their lessons to teach towards that test. And people feel like they have done it in a way that is valuable and is really teaching teachers important skills in order to most effectively teach students and improve on student learning, and also to really become, as we've said before, reflective practitioners and reflect on their own teaching practice so they can really improve. And right now I'm trying to embed that, you know, some of the EdTPA protocol into my classes, but I'm trying to do it in a way so that the students understand the value of it and how they can grow through it. Because if not, it's just going to be a task for them, burdensome and very stressful.
We'll return to 30 Brave Minutes in a moment, but first, thank you for listening and for your financial support of the College of Arts and Sciences. The Dean's Fund exists to help students and faculty make meaningful connections to the community, the state, and beyond through intellectual inquiry, scholarships, and research in the humanities, social sciences, and the STEM fields. Consider a contribution today. Mark your envelope, the Dean's Fund, College of Arts and Sciences, UNC Pembroke, Hickory Hall, Pembroke, North Carolina, 28372, or call the College of Arts and Sciences at 910-521-6198. You can also find us on the web. And now, back to 30 Brave Minutes and your host, Jeff Frederick.
How are teachers today preparing their students differently than they would just 10 or 20 years ago? I know the content skills paradigm that you mentioned is part of it, but how else?
Well, it's interesting because we sort of have a dual tension happening in education. At the turn of the century, the No Child Left Behind Act came into legislation, which placed a lot of emphasis on high-stakes standardized testing, which really privileged reading and math. And there was a lot of tension of this idea of teaching to the test and this idea that teachers were supposed to really just teach reading and teach mathematics. And in a lot of ways, because social studies, which is, you know, my specialty area, was in a quote unquote untested area, we didn't become part of that conversation. And what we found is that there was a lot of frustration with teachers, and there was also a lot of pushback on that, right? And a sense of how it is that we can be effective with students. And a lot of this rose out of a sense of like achievement gaps and how it is that we can bring students into being more competitive on a global scale. And I think that after over a decade of bringing children up in that atmosphere of this high stakes testing, we're realizing that's not a good way to educate students, and that one of the greatest strengths that we have in American education is our ability to be creative and our ability to be innovative. And I would argue that we're looking to a return to that. And I think that there are a lot of parents on the ground that are pushing back against high-stakes standardized testing. And I think that there are a lot of teachers that are pushing back against that as well. Legislation might be a little slow to respond, but I think that there's definitely some grassroots resistance to that. And good teachers know what good teaching looks like, and they're definitely doing it in our schools.
Public education has a lot of critics, and they often think that they know what's wrong with the schools, what's wrong with education. Talk a little bit about the unforeseen ways in which public schools, both in our state and across the country, are excelling, but maybe don't always hit the talking points that the critics pull out.
Well, to this, I think it's important to realize that we are talking about human beings, and we're talking about an incredibly diverse pool of human beings. I might have the date wrong, but I think it was May 17th of 2012 was the very first time in American history that more babies of color were born in this nation than white babies were born. And I think that's pretty significant because those babies are going to be entering kindergarten this fall. And what that means is that our school systems are incredibly diverse. We are very much a pluralistic society, and we need to remember that with that comes teachers that need to attend to the needs of all learners. And that's very much in our teaching standards. There's an expectation that we have to meet those diverse learning needs, and we need to learn how, and we need to understand how to differentiate our instruction. And I think a lot of teachers out there, they do that, and they do that very, very well. That doesn't always necessarily translate onto a quantitative test score. That, especially if you have students that are English language learners, that always doesn't necessarily translate very well if their primary language is Spanish and they're taking a test in English. Or the fact that a teacher maybe might provide snacks for a hungry student in an impoverished school district, or a teacher who maybe might be sitting there staying after school every day on his or her own time and his or her own dime, helping students that need that extra help. Those are those intangible moments. Every semester in my methods class, I ask my students, who was the teacher that inspired them? And every time, every student talks about that teacher that went that extra mile. Because at the end of the day, students remember the teacher that cared.
And for all the students that we point out from time to time that might fall through the cracks, there's such a huge number who leave the public schools literate in technology, able to perform in lots of different ways, able to be a citizen in the global village, which requires you to do business, to educate, to live. with a whole diverse cocktail of world citizens and philosophies. And we meet that challenge every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we do. I think we do it in a lot of very unseen ways, maybe not in observable, quantifiable ways, but I think we do.
Let's take the other side of the argument, though, for all of the ways in which public schools are performing, maybe overachieving in some ways that aren't identifiable and measurable. There are some challenges. What are the things that the public schools need to continue to get better at?
Well, one thing I think that public schools could definitely get better at is remembering that teaching is a profession, and we're not just teachers, we're educators. And I think that that's a really important distinction to make, and that we can remember that it's a profession. Teachers are held to an incredibly rigorous standard, and the lengths that they have to go to and the training that happens at the collegiate level for teachers, and the testing and the standards to which they are held to in the process of becoming a teacher are incredibly rigorous, and they're just getting even more rigorous. The state of North Carolina has recently passed legislation that's going into effect upcoming academic year, in the 17-18 academic year, that is going to hold an even higher standard for its teachers. And I think that speaks to an expectation of excellence, a desire for excellence. I think parents want excellent teachers. And if you want excellent teachers, if we as a public want excellent teachers, then we need to provide avenues.
I think that bridging the gap between low-income and middle to high-income students is one of our biggest challenges. I think that some students enter school at a deficit. You know, I think that there was this, you know, there's lots of studies that are out there just saying the vocabulary of middle to high-income students is so much greater than, you know, children who are coming from poverty. So I think that, you know, figuring out and trying to kind of bridge that gap is a huge challenge. And part of that challenge is that, you know, laws in education and mandates in education often come from those who are not educators, right? So it's like figuring out the culture of each school and the needs of each school is so variable, you know, from a suburban school to a rural school to an urban school and so on and so forth. So I think sometimes we are mandated to teach certain things that really might not be applicable to the students that you're teaching. So I think that that is another huge problem in a challenge in education. Obviously, funding is a huge challenge. Here in North Carolina, just recently, you know, they passed a legislation last year that reduced class size from kindergarten to third graders. So now they're threatening to cut arts and PE teachers. So, you know, if we don't have arts, you know, that's, you know, a very sad thing. And same with physical education. So I think funding is a huge challenge in education. And then because of the rigorous demands in order to become a teacher and then to be a teacher too, I mean, there's so much work teachers have to do that is outside the sphere of their classroom. They have to do these assessments. They have to set these professional goals. They have to write reports and so on and so forth. And they don't get compensated that well. I think that's a deterrent. So attracting, you know, creative, educated, committed people, I think is challenging when they could go into another profession and earn a lot more money. So I think those are some of the biggest challenges we have to education. And then the future of education is really unknown because of our new Secretary of Education, who was confirmed 2 days ago. You know, she's not you know, that concerns me about education too, is the direction, because she has little experience in public schools. And I have to tell you honestly, as a parent too, who has small young children who are going to be entering kindergarten next year, I have a lot of reservation about sending my children to the North Carolina public schools because of the funding. You know, we're ranked number 48th in the state, and teachers are not paid or compensated very well in the state. So I do have a lot of reservation about it, and really will have to investigate the schools that my children go to if they are indeed go to public schools. However, you know, in my experience of supervising student teachers across the state and seeing, you know, many different schools and public schools, I have seen some wonderful schools and some wonderful teachers in the school, which have really kind of boosted my confidence in the North Carolina public school system. I think that, you know, and our teachers that I have supervised seem to be pretty well prepared to enter into the classroom. So that is very, very encouraging. You know, I think generally in the American schools, because of the adoption of Common Core standards, which might move us away, hopefully, from all those standardized testing that we're doing, even though they're still in effect now, and I think in North Carolina too, I think that the Common Core standards are really there to promote critical thinking and problem solving among students and give teachers more freedom to kind of plan their curriculum and be creative in planning their lessons and curriculum. So hopefully this will really improve the schools a lot in America, and hopefully that there will be an emphasis on, you know, creative ways of thinking, on problem solving and critical thinking in the classroom.
Envision what the public schools look like in 10 years. What's the future of public education? What's different about teachers then? What's different about students then?
Well, every generation changes. Every generation brings something new to the table. And every generation has different values and different ideas of how the world ought to look. I think that the way perhaps boomers and Gen Xers remember school is nothing like what school looks like today. The technology piece, just on some very practical levels, like the technology piece has really changed school. Cell phones in schools. I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, I couldn't even imagine my mom trying to get a hold of me in the middle of the day. And now as a parent of teenagers, I can't imagine not being able to get a hold of my child in the middle of the day. So it's almost like, on the one hand, as a teacher in a school, being annoyed that my students have cell phones, but as a parent, being annoyed that my kid's not answering me. And it's a very interesting tension in trying to figure out how to navigate those waters, and how, as an educator, to use that technology to our advantage. For example, Wake County has a BYOD, bring your own device, policy. A lot of schools are on one-to-one initiatives, but also making sure that how to navigate what we call a technological divide, that there are students in more impoverished spaces that don't have access to technology or even access to the internet, believe it or not. Even here in America, not everybody has the same access to the internet that maybe more middle class or upwardly mobile communities have. And so I think that that's really going to play itself out, particularly over the next decade or so. And then I think, you know, the online component, digital learning environments are really going to have a deep impact. I think we're seeing that in higher education, the impact that digital learning is having.
Students, parents, teachers, digital technology, schools, classrooms, they all have to come together, and they all have to have a shared vision of what a public education must be in order for it to work.
Yes. I think one thing at the end of the day that's never going to go away is the human element.
Amen to that. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I hope you'll pass this along to someone else who cares about public education in schools, and join us the next time for another edition of 30 Brave Minutes.
Today's podcast was produced by Dr. Richard Gay and transcribed by Ms. Janet Gentis. Theme music created by Riley Morton. This content is copyrighted by the University of North Carolina and the College of Arts and Sciences. It is to be used for educational and non-commercial purposes only, and is not to be changed, altered, or used for any commercial endeavor without the express written permission of authorized representatives of the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. The views and opinions expressed by any individuals during the course of these discussions are their own and do not necessarily represent the views, opinions, and positions of the University of North Carolina at Pembroke or any of its subsidiary programs, schools, departments, and divisions. While reasonable efforts have been made to ensure that information discussed is current and accurate at the time of release, neither UNCP nor any individual presenting material makes any warranty that information presented in the original recording has remained accurate due to advances in research, technology, or industry standards. Thanks for listening to 30 Brave Minutes, and go Braves!